Welcome to Truth and Circumstances, where we apply the truth of God's Word to the difficult situations of real life. I'm Kyle Lamb, and with me is Greg Birdwell, preaching pastor at Providence Bible Fellowship in Westchester, Ohio. Today we're going to be addressing the question, is it wrong for a Christian to consume alcohol or to use tobacco products?
All right, the easy answer is no. So we could just stop recording there, but that's not the most helpful way to answer the question. There are nuances to the issue that we should get into. So bottom line, no, it's not inherently sinful to do these things. There are no prohibitions against them in the scriptures, but let's try to be a little more helpful. I'm going to focus more on alcohol because it's a more common issue, but people can apply what we say here to other Christian liberties as they see fit.
Right. Let's start by saying it is unequivocally sinful to get drunk.
Yeah, so we should say it is sinful to get drunk, but that's not the question. The question was, is it wrong to consume alcohol? But we just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. It is sinful to get drunk. Ephesians 5:18 says, "Do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery." In 1 Corinthians 5, Paul lists drunkards along with the sexually immoral and idolaters as the kinds of people who should be put out of the church. So if there's somebody who is engaged in unrepentant drunkenness, they should be the subjects of loving church discipline. There are many references in the Old Testament to this effect. It is sinful to get drunk. Now, some would want to argue, well, where is that line between sobriety and drunkenness? Since we don't know where that line is, shouldn't we just not drink at all? I don't think that's a valid argument because the Bible seems to make a distinction between responsible drinking and being a drunkard. For example, Paul writes in 1 Timothy that elders and deacons must not be drunkards, but in the very same letter, he instructs Timothy to drink wine for the sake of his health. And honestly, if we think that Jesus gave the disciples grape juice for communion, we're being a little silly. That wine was used for communion is evidenced in 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul rebukes the church there for getting drunk at the Lord's table. They weren't getting drunk on grape juice.
Right.
Okay, so they were using wine. So people were overdoing it at the Lord's table. The point is that the Bible doesn't rule out drinking altogether on the basis that we don't know exactly where inebriation begins. So the early church used alcohol and yet recognized that getting drunk was a sin. So we shouldn't, on the basis of this idea that we don't know when somebody starts to get drunk, on that basis we shouldn't say, well, we shouldn't drink at all. But when we talk about this issue, it's typically not a question of what should I do, but frequently what we're really asking is, what should other people do? In other words, people have different views on this, and a lot of the time when this question comes up, people are really saying, shouldn't other people be teetotalers like me? Or they're saying, shouldn't other people get off my back about this? Shouldn't I be able to enjoy a drink since the Bible doesn't condemn it? So that typically is where this question is coming from. So why don't we get to that stuff?
Yeah, so on issues of Christian liberty, we should be guided by love for one another.
That's the big thing to keep in mind. Love for one another is the big idea. And we've talked about this so much in John 13 through 15. Those of you who are not Providence Bible Fellowship people, we're in a sermon series right now in the chapters of 13 through 17 in the Gospel of John, where we have seen Jesus over and over telling his disciples, love one another as I have loved you. That's how people are going to know that you're my disciples. And we could say that Christian liberties are those activities that we're free to engage in as believers, but about which some believers have sensitive consciences, okay? And those kinds of issues are dealt with in places like Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8 and 9, And an overriding principle in those chapters is that our actions toward one another on such issues should be guided by love. And I would say that Paul is just echoing Jesus, because it's just, it's a hallmark of the Christian life that we love one another. Our actions toward one another should be guided by love. So people on both sides, those who engage in liberties, whom the scriptures refer to as the stronger brother, and those who abstain, whom the scriptures refer to as the weaker brother, they should both be guided in their actions by love for one another. Jesus says, by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another.
Yeah, so the stronger brother should be careful with the conscience of his weaker brother.
Yeah, so Romans 14, 1 Corinthians 8 and 9. In those chapters, the issue is primarily the eating of meat sacrificed to idols, okay, which we don't really deal with today. But that issue, we can use it to apply to what we're talking about with drinking, because Paul says about that issue of eating meat sacrificed to idols that it's not wrong. It's not inherently wrong to eat that meat. Now, that's in 1 Corinthians 8, okay? And what he says is that those idols to whom that meat is sacrificed, those idols aren't really even gods. They're inanimate objects. So this is just meat. It's like any other meat. There's nothing inherently wrong with eating the meat that's been sacrificed to an inanimate object. He's saying there's nothing wrong with it. But there are some brothers and sisters whose consciences are weak, he says. And because of their experiences, some of these brothers and sisters, because of their pasts in engaging in false worship in those temples, their consciences will not allow them to eat those sacrifices. In their hearts, they believe it's sinful to eat that meat. And that's because of their past. They've got these bad memories of that, okay? Yeah.
This makes me think of, and I think this is a really big temptation among those in the Reformed community, this theological superiority. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it blinds us from the love we should be showing our brothers. Like, you can just see someone saying, like, how stupid is it to think that, you know, this meat's actually being sacrificed to idols? Don't they know this isn't a god? And then we're just tempted to just be crude and unloving.
Yeah.
And we see ourselves as, I'm the strong brother, I have this great theological understanding, and then we're making the weak brother just sometimes feel so unloved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Paul would have a hard time with a lot of modern-day Reformed bloggers.
Sure.
You know, just, you guys are unloving, and you need to be slapped around a little bit. Here's something really important to keep in mind. If someone believes something to be sinful, even if it is not inherently sinful, if they then do that thing, it is sinful for them. That's what Paul means in Romans 14, 14 when he writes, I know and am persuaded in the Lord that nothing is unclean in itself, but it is unclean for anyone who thinks it unclean. And he's talking about this issue of eating meat that's been sacrificed to idols. For these people who believe that eating meat that's been offered to idols, they believe that it's sinful. If they then eat it, in their hearts, they are rebelling against God, even though eating that meat is not inherently sinful. So even though the act was not inherently sinful, they did it out of a heart of rebellion. And this is what Paul means at the end of Romans 14 when he writes, but whoever has doubts is condemned if he eats, because the eating is not from faith. For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin. So the argument that Paul makes in 1 Corinthians 8 is that when the weaker brother sees someone like Paul eating meat sacrificed to idols, he may be tempted to violate his conscience and join Paul in eating meat sacrificed to idols, therefore defiling his conscience and sinning. That may sound strange, but Paul, because of his clear conscience, he could eat that meat without sinning, but the weaker brother, by eating the same meat, would have sinned because in his mind the act was sinful. So Paul would have eaten the meat out of faith. The weaker brother would have eaten the meat out of a heart of rebellion. Paul would not have sinned. The weaker brother would have sinned. So Paul says, I don't want to be guilty of putting a stumbling block in front of my brother. Paul says, I'm going to love my brother more than I love meat, and I'm not going to eat that meat.
Yeah, so what is a stumbling block?
Yeah, I think a lot of people misunderstand this. A stumbling block is a use of my freedom that tempts another brother or sister to violate their conscience. Hmm. It's a use of my freedom that tempts another brother or sister to violate their conscience. Paul's thought was, I would rather never eat meat than cause my brother to sin or to violate their conscience. Now, I was raised in a part of the country, and in a particular denomination where drinking was a sin, and it didn't matter what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was hardwired into my brain and heart, so that it's been a little difficult for me to think biblically on this issue, and I've had to work hard to educate my conscience, so to speak. My wife was raised the same way. So when we see Christians drinking, we have to make a conscious effort to think biblically and tell ourselves, there's nothing sinful going on here. It is not a sin to drink. It's getting easier all the time for us as we continue to think biblical thoughts about this. But there are other people whose consciences are more sensitive than mine on this issue. And if I were a drinker, like Paul, I would want to be very careful around those kinds of folks. I would not want my drinking to tempt them to violate their conscience. That just seems to be a very straightforward application of 1 Corinthians 8. Love, it seems, would require me to abstain from alcohol around that person rather than causing them to violate their conscience by encouraging them to drink by my drinking around them. And I would think that like, especially for me as a pastor, somebody who is like a leader in the community, I would want to be especially careful, because, you know, for somebody to see me drinking, that might be even more of an encouragement for somebody to violate their conscience on that issue. Right. Man, Pastor Greg's doing it. That there might be even more of a pull to violate their conscience.
Right, right. So we would say, given the weaknesses of many people toward alcohol addiction, it is wise to be very guarded about where and when we consume alcohol.
Yeah, you've got people who have consciences that are very sensitive on this issue, who may not have ever had a drink in their lives, okay? But then there are other people who have actually struggled with alcoholism. Now, it's not okay for anyone to look at pornography, so the analogy that I'm about to make isn't perfect, okay? So, admittedly, this isn't perfect. But imagine if you knew of somebody who had a years-long pornography addiction at church, and you went up to them and just started surfing porn right in front of them. That would be a terribly unloving thing to do. I mean, let's forget for just a second that you shouldn't be looking at it either. But it's kind of what's going on when you drink in front of somebody who has struggled with drinking for a long time. We need to understand how difficult it can be for someone who has overcome being a drunkard to even hear people talking about alcohol. You and I, we have brothers and sisters here at Providence Bible Fellowship who have struggled with this so greatly that they have to alter the routes that they take when they drive places so that they are not tempted to stop at liquor stores. Imagine then what it does to them when they hear Christian brothers and sisters talk about enjoying a beer with one another. I think if Paul could see that kind of behavior, he would think, man, what are you doing? Shouldn't we love one another by being very careful around our brothers and sisters? Romans 14:15 reads, by what you eat, or we could paraphrase and say, by what you drink, do not destroy the one for whom Christ died. Now, similarly, there are family members of those who have been severely affected by the addictions of their loved ones, and when we hear about other people enjoying, when they hear about other people enjoying alcohol, they are reminded of those terrible memories, and it may be unloving to them for us to drink in front of them or talk about drinking in front of them. Now, this does not necessarily mean that those who do drink should stop all use of alcohol altogether. Again, the scriptures do not command us to abstain from alcohol. And for us to make that an absolute standard for ourselves or others is by definition legalism. It's adding to the scriptures. But love would dictate that we be extremely careful about how we talk about alcohol, where we consume it, and when we consume it. Hmm. And if I were a drinker, this is me personally, okay? If I were a drinker, I personally wouldn't talk about it on social media. I most likely would not talk about it in public settings. I most likely would only drink alcohol in the most intimate of settings with those I was certain were of like mind. I wouldn't offer it to anyone. Even people that I had into my own home, I probably would not offer it to them unless I was certain they were of like mind, okay?
I would hope too, Greg, that we would take more joy out of loving a brother and sister in their, as Paul would say, the weakness of their conscience, rather than exercising our liberty. I would hope that we would be more thrilled, more delighted in loving a brother, exercising the love of Christ, than, oh, I should be able to drink, and, you know, almost pouting about it.
Right. Yeah. And there are folks whose attitude is, toward the weaker brother is, you need to grow up and get over this.
Right.
And that is kind of part of the problem that Paul addresses in Romans 14. Hmm. No, you need to be sensitive to the weaker brother.
Right.
You've got to be sensitive to the weaker brother because we're supposed to love one another. We should do this out of love, which is the explicit motive both in Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8. And we should make a conscious effort not to look down on that weaker brother because of their sensitive conscience. Romans 14:3 reads, "Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains." We could paraphrase that to say, "Let not the one who drinks despise the one who abstains."
Yeah, we also should not pass judgment on those who enjoy Christian liberties.
Yeah, so this is for the people on the other side, yeah. those who are teetotalers or who have, now I'm a teetotaler whose conscience is not sensitive on the issue, but for those whose consciences are very sensitive and who believe that no one should drink, we should not pass judgment on those who enjoy Christian liberties. Romans 14:3, "Let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him." So you and I cannot make up laws for ourselves or other people that are not contained in Scripture. That is what we call legalism. It's a form of legalism, okay? Now, some may want to argue, and I've heard this, shouldn't everybody just stop drinking altogether out of love for the weaker brother? Well, first of all, no, because the Scriptures don't tell us to do that. But second, and more practically, we really need to think about how that kind of thinking can lead to an absolute lockdown of all behavior. Hmm. Because we all have our own peculiarities of conscience, and we all have our own sinful weaknesses, okay? So here's something, just a weird thing about me that I'll throw out there to illustrate the point. I don't have any entertainment apps on my phone because I'm trying to be a good steward of my time. Hmm. So if I decided that I was going to make it a rule, not just for myself, but for everybody else, no entertainment apps on phones. Because, Kyle, when I see you with looking at Twitter on your phone or Instagram on your phone or Facebook on your phone, it tempts me to put those apps on my phone and therefore waste my time. Well, then I'm locking everybody else out of an activity that's not inherently sinful. Hmm. And now that's just me. That's just one thing. What if somebody else has a thing against using steak knives? I mean, you multiply this by however many people there are in a church or the church universal, and eventually we're all just staring at the wall all
day.
We're
in monasteries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we decided to make rules requiring everyone to accommodate all of everyone else's peculiarities of conscience, we would likely resemble the Pharisees straining a gnat and swallowing a camel. So this is precisely why Paul instructs us in Romans 14, okay, you have your convictions, let them have their convictions, and let everyone be fully convinced in their own mind. Don't pass judgment on those who enjoy Christian liberties, and don't put up arbitrary rules for them based upon your own extra-biblical standards. That is as unloving as it is for them to enjoy their Christian liberties in front of the weaker brother. So just don't do it. Love one another. Love one another.
I think, too, the weaker brother should probably let others know, too, what their weaknesses are. Because you may find a situation where they're harboring resentment towards someone because they see them engaging in an activity, maybe that they have a weak conscience toward, but yet they've never told that brother, hey, I struggle with this. And that it just goes back to the mentality, they should just know it. It's unloving. It's loving to let them know, hey, I want to help you help me. Here's what I struggle with.
Exactly. So. Now, that's a very helpful point. And I would add a caveat to that and say, make sure that that's something that you actually struggle with and not something that you just don't like.
Yeah, don't be manipulative.
Right, yeah. It may be that you, we had somebody, this is years ago, that thought we had worldly music that we used worldly music here at Providence Bible Fellowship. They didn't like worldly music. They didn't have a problem with worldly music. They just thought we shouldn't use it. Now, that's a situation where I would say that doesn't qualify for what we're talking about here. You just have a prejudice against it, and you're being legalistic.
Right.
Now, if you actually struggle with that, and it's a conscience issue for that, let me know about that.
Yeah,
but if it's just that you don't think anybody should do that, and you don't have a problem with that, keep it to yourself.
Right. All right, Greg. Until next time.
All right.
This has been Truth and Circumstances. You can visit our website at truthandcircumstances.com. If you have any questions you'd like to hear us address on the podcast, you can email those to questions@truthandcircumstances.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and ask your questions there. Truth and Circumstances is a ministry of Providence Bible Fellowship in Westchester, Ohio.